for a socially distant radio show today. You like the long cords there, Governor? That work okay?
Yeah, it's great. Thank you.
Yeah, so we can just keep follow the rules and have long cords, and it's great. How are you?
I'm great.
Good to see you. We've interviewed you many times in this room before in your tenure as governor the first 4 years. This feels very different for, obviously, the enormous events of the last year. You talked about that in your State of the State. Much of this legislative session is touched by that. Just tell me how that all feels.
Well, I certainly, it's been a momentous year, historic year, but it's also, I think we're set up in North Dakota. We're in a position where I think our citizens can have a lot of optimism about the future and a lot of gratitude about the what's been accomplished in the last year. I mean, we're in a state that is probably better positioned to emerge from this global economic crisis than just about any other state in the nation.
And, how can that be?
Well, it is incredible because
of course, when you say that, I think California, Michigan, Pennsylvania, New York, and you're saying we're positioned better than any of the other 49, and that sort of blows my mind.
Well, I think, you know, there's two things. We got the balance sheet, and then we got the P&L, the profit and loss statement. North Dakota's balance sheet is in fantastic shape. Whether you take the fully filled up budget stabilization fund, which we haven't touched yet, the foundation aid fund, which supports K-12, which is over $5 billion, the legacy fund, which there'll be a lot of debate about how to use that. So the
you're talking fiscal health. If you're running an operation, how do we do what we could do and how do we do it better than anybody else? They're hobbled because their numbers don't look so good. We're not.
Exactly.
And then what do you do with that? How do we take that position and really get to some things we wanted to check a box on for a long time? Bringing other industries in here, or bringing more people in here, or whatever we want to do. What's top on your bucket list in that regard?
Well, I think we talked about this in both the budget address and in the State of the State, which is we've got an opportunity here without raising tax dollars $1. We take the earnings that come off, that flow off the legacy fund, and we use that at a time when we've got these historically low interest rates. I mean, the Federal Reserve is trying to drive interest rates low to restore the economy. The 10-year bond rate right now is 1.1%. I think the 20-year is 1.7. I mean, we could borrow bonds for 20-year bonds and then loan them out at 2% interest to municipalities, local political subdivisions, schools, water projects, and the state would actually, that would be a permanent revolving loan fund that would be making money because we can stoke it up with a bunch of money right now that's basically the federal government's giving away. And so I think we have a chance to take the legacy fund and create another permanent legacy, which is this long-term revolving permanent infrastructure loan fund. And it gets caught up. People say, oh, bonding, borrowing's bad. You know, borrowing's bad if interest rates are high and the projects you invest them in have a lower return than what you borrowed. If you can borrow at a low rate and invest them in something that has a higher return for taxpayers than what you borrowed the money, then you're making money every day. And so this is an opportunity that North Dakota shouldn't miss.
What will be the objections to that? What will be the big fight on that? You hear a lot of talk about infrastructure and bonding right now, probably second only to, how do we use the legacy earnings? You're going to hear arguments, and that's sort of a traditional North Dakota, belt and suspenders kind of way of thinking. I get that. People don't like bonding for that very reason. It's just more debt, but as you say, it's debt at low. Beyond that, what will be the biggest objections?
Well, I think the biggest one will be some kind of resistance to the idea of borrowing itself, because it is a completely conservative, fiscally conservative, economic sound idea right now in these interest rate environments. And, there's times when it wouldn't make sense and there are times when it does, just like when there's anybody that's been in business knows timing matters. And we have a window of opportunity here to do something really incredible and permanent for the citizens of North Dakota.
Give me an example of the top two things you think, if that was available and it was here, would be most important to do that would get the return you're talking about.
Well, I think, one of the things we know is across the state, we've got hundreds and hundreds of bridges in North Dakota that are in disrepair. When you've got those bridges in disrepair, you got to lower the load limits. Farm-to-market roads get longer, take citizens more time. So part of it is transportation infrastructure. Another part of it is water infrastructure. We know that we've got some big water projects that we need to complete, and there will be gaps in all these projects of financing. We see that on the Water Commission. As Brent Sanford and I lead the Water Commission, there's an estimated over the next 10 years $10 billion of potential water projects in our state. We know that's essential to industry. It's essential to communities. It's essential to growth. And those can all afford to do their gap financing with low interest financing, because you've got a water bill, you have a sewer bill. You don't have to raise the rates on people. You might even be able to lower the water and sewer rates if you could borrow money at this rate. So it's essential basic infrastructure for the state of North Dakota. But then if you said, hey, we want to also do it for school construction, or you want to do it for other projects like the say the ag building, finishing that off at India Shoe, that would help us sell our crops all over the world. I mean, there's things where individual projects that you could look at that have.
I'm waiting for you to swing for the fences, though. I those things are all things you would do slam dunk if you had the money, and I think it makes sense to do them when the interest rates are where they are. What's the thing that everybody around the country would go, holy buckets, did they crush it on that? I mean, whether it's attracting new industry that might be no other state can do, but we can do it because we put the platform in for them to come in, boom, now. Is there anything like that in your bucket list?
Well, I think there is, but not necessarily under bonding. Because bonding, you want to match revenue streams to pay down the bonds with infrastructure that's going to be here. I mean, if you're going to build infrastructure that lasts for 30 or 40 years, then borrowing money for 10 or 20 years to pay for it makes a ton of sense. What we don't want to do is borrow money and give it away to a one-time project that might have uncertainty. But with the legacy fund earnings, because our proposal only takes 1.6% of the earnings return, which is about 40% of the return, and applies that towards the bonding. The other legacy earnings you could put into legacy projects that you described and then set those up with match funding. I mean, like, let's take career and technical education. We know this is something that's great for students, great for K-12, great for higher ed, great for industry. I mean, it's a slam dunk, and there are businesses from John Deere to you name it, that would love to get in and help support that. I mean, you take a look at career and technical training today. I mean, every piece of farm machinery is a computer on wheels. They need educated workforce to help repair and maintain those. We don't have enough capacity. We get kids coming out of North Dakota State School for Science. Some of those kids have got 7 job offers. You know, we've got to expand our capacity in doing that. And if we put up some of the legacy fund money, legacy fund earnings, like we did with the library, where we put an endowment out there and we raised $2 of private sector dollars for every dollar of state endowment that doesn't even leave the building. I mean, those kinds of returns, we could do that for CTE. We could say, here's $45 million to go build CTE across the state, and just watch the private sector dollars line up to match that, because they need graduates. K-12 needs those kind of programs, and it can't just be in one city. It can't be just the Career Academy in Bismarck. It's got to be everywhere.
I want to just touch on one of those projects you mentioned, the Teddy Roosevelt Library. Because you got a whole ton of grief in the last session over that, right? I mean, probably more than anything. And it was, well, you know, state money for that, da-da-da. You did exactly what you said you were going to do. There was not even actually, we're writing a check from $50 million for the state, but rather, a loan and other things that weren't even that far. And just like you predicted, 2-to-1, the dollars came in from private sources. Now, you can agree or disagree whether this will do what people say it's going to do. I happen to think it will. I happen to think more people come to the park. I think more people go to the musical. And I think we'll have one of 19 in the world that is a presidential library, whatever the number is.
14.
One of 14. Yeah, we're even a little better. That was genius. Absolute genius. And look, I'm looking forward to the Teddy Roosevelt Presidential Library. I can't even wait. I've been to probably 6 of the 14. And absolutely loved him. So kudos on that, because I know you took a ton of grief trying to get it through, but you did what you say you were going to do, and I think that kind of got lost with all the COVID stuff going on and everything else. So,
well, raising $100 million in the middle of COVID is not an easy thing to do, but what that could mean for us, for economically, for K-12, for higher ed, for employment. The library has got really unlimited potential.
More with Governor Doug Burgum. Your text questions welcome after this. Back with Governor Burgum. I want to ask you a little bit about education. You mentioned education a bunch in your comments there. And, you know, it seems like we have these debates a lot. I was at a Main Street Initiative event in Grafton, North Dakota. And you were sitting down for lunch with half a dozen legislators, and I'll never forget it. You had just, I think, come back from Arizona State University, and you talked about a different model and a different way to do education. And I was like, man, you had me at hello. That would be perfect. We got to do that. That's the way to be innovative and compete against these bigger schools. And I know that's why you set up the task force to look at that in the committee. You heard the other side. What part of that is possible? And quick 30,000-foot view of what I'm talking about for the audience.
Well, let's split education in two pieces, K-12 and higher ed, because they've got two very different set of challenges facing them. And the conversation where I remember you dropped in with us there was related to higher ed. And I think on higher ed, pre-COVID, you had incredible forces. One is demographics. It used to be college was an 18 to 22-year-old thing. Now the average age of a student taking a online course from the University of North Dakota is 31 years old. So demographics have changed. Maybe you got fewer 18 to 22-year-olds, but it opens up a whole new world of customers, a.k.a. students, that you can serve at all stages in their life that want to get additional certification or capability to move forward. So that's number one. The economics are that there's new forms of competition. Universities used to have a pretty solid sort of wall or moat around their business model if it was somebody that lived within 60 miles of their campus that could either live on campus or drive there. Now every university in the world can serve almost any student in the world through online. So the economic competition changes and the pricing is coming down. Higher education went through decades of increased pricing in part because of the all of the federal loan money. We went from, under Obama, we went from under half of a trillion to almost $1.4 trillion in student loan. And when you shove a lot of money at cheap student loan, and now they're talking about forgiving some of those loans, you're basically creating a bubble in higher education, which allowed people to, you know, cover their costs by increasing prices.
You've described the landscape very well of where we're at. And where you want to get to, in your mind, is only possible with a change in governance? Or do you think this Board of Higher Ed can do what you're talking about now?
Well, this board can do some of that now. We felt that starting with governance, I mean, if you're trying to change the business model, sometimes it's a good idea to change the governance thing. But and we've got five new presidents out of 11 in the state of North Dakota, so we've got some leaders that are interested in being transformational and moving their organizations forward.
A couple of minutes left. I'm going to go rapid fire. So quick questions, quick answers. One, all the COVID questions I've had for you today by text have been related to masks. And, you know, that is controversial. You know, one person saying, how can you claim the mask mandate is the reason cases went down when South Dakota didn't have one and theirs went down too? Masks are controversial. I even heard a thing on Catholic radio last night, and it was saying masks are stealing our human-to-human connection. You know, it's of evil because it's trying to take away that bond. Now, I know other people are going to say, holy buckets, how dumb is it? Wear it because you're helping me, you're helping you. What point in time do you think we are beyond the mask mandate? We're not wearing them. We're healthy enough where we can go back to where we were.
Well, I think North Dakota's numbers are improving, and credit to everybody in the state that's doing their part to help break the chain of transmission. That's good news. You know, the bad news is that we're still in the middle of a pandemic. And last week, the nation had, you know, record deaths, record hospitalization, and record cases. And we've seen this thing come and go. And so I think, you know, we're going to be taking a look at the data this week again and trying to make a balanced decision. But, what we'd like to do is get rid of all the business restrictions as quickly as possible. And the masks are one thing that is actually has very little or no economic cost, and it helps create a level playing field between businesses.
One other topic. You had a contentious relationship, I would argue, with the legislature last session. Some people complained they couldn't get access to you, whether they could or not, I don't know, but that's what they say. And it was a battle, right? It was almost like anything you were for, they were against. I'm talking about the majority, and not everybody was in that camp. Do you have plans to do something different so that temperature's turned down a little bit this session?
Well, we never believed that narrative last time. I mean, our access probably was unprecedented. We held more events. I think I had dinner with any I invited every legislator to dinner at the residence, and anybody that accepted it had dinner with me during the session at least once last time. And we'll continue to keep working on those relationships because we have a lot of common interests, a lot of common goals, and I've got a lot of great relationships with legislators. We're looking forward to working with them.
To be continued. We'll be tracking all these goals. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Scott.
Governor Doug Burgum with us on What's on Your Mind.